The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
There's a set of inner qualities, capacities of character, that are emphasized as being important to develop. And if you go to places like Burma to practice meditation, if a person runs into some difficulty with their meditation practice, it's fairly common for the teachers there to analyze the difficulty from the point of view that certain inner strengths haven't been developed strong enough. In the psychological West, difficulty arises in practice, and there's a tendency to see the problem as being some personal failing, like something that happened in your childhood or some difficulty, and you have to kind of go see a therapist. And sometimes that's true. I don't want to kind of make fun of that. But there's kind of a very different approach to looking at things. And often in Burma, Thailand, the idea of developing strengths, inner strengths, to support the practice, to allow the practice to go along, is important. And if you have the requisite strengths, then of course you're not, that doesn't need to be emphasized. If you want to go hike the Pacific Coast Trail, the Crest Trail, you don't, you know, you better build up some strength first. And if you have the requisite strength, then you don't have to do it. Then you can go for a stroll. There's 10 strengths that are talked about, and these are called the 10 paramis, 10 perfections. And I'll list them quickly. You don't have to try to remember them, but they are generosity, ethics, wisdom, renunciation, patience, loving kind. No, that's not that. Truth, resolve or determination, loving kindness, equanimity, and what? Patience. I says patience. There'll be patience. So anyway, close enough. 9 out of 10. Memory is not one of the strengths that. So the one I want to talk about this evening is determination or resolve. And sometimes in people's lives, this is a quality that would be useful to develop and to strengthen. It's a quality that should be called upon for support. And other times, it's maybe not needed. Not so. What I'm saying today is not necessarily meant to be applicable in all areas, but it is very important. And some people have this quality more than others. Each of these strengths, people have these 10 strengths, some people have one more than the other, and that one might be enough to carry them quite far. So in my life, my practice, I feel that the quality of resolve or determination was one of my strengths. And it carried me in my practice, in the years of intense practice I did, or the daily meditation practice that I do, the idea of some kind of determination, resolve, dedication, aspiration. I don't think of myself as having an innate capacity for concentration. So some people have that as a strength. It's not one of my strengths, I don't feel. But it comes along, the idea of getting concentrated in practice, because it comes in the wake of my ability to be determined. I'm going to do this. The word for that's translated into English as resolve or as determination is adhitana in Pali. And the adi part means something like special or higher. And the tana, the etymology of the word, means to stand. And I don't know if it's fair to call on the etymology of the word to understand it, but I kind of am fond of the fact that you could translate the roots of the word as meaning to take a special stand, to take a stand. And so to know what's important and to take a stand there and be dedicated to it and be connected. So to have a determination, be determined, is an important quality. I like the word resolve also as a translation of this adhitana, because I just love the fact that the solve, part of resolve, to solve again, is connected to dissolve, like going to solution. It may, in Latin, the word for dissolve or to untie. And so rather than this kind of grim determination, where you bear down, I like the fact that in the word resolve is this idea of kind of dissolving or letting go or untying something, becoming free. So, and that's one of the central determinations in our tradition, is a determination for freedom, not to be entangled or caught or tied up in our attachments and clinging. Sometimes when Buddhist practice is emphasized, or sometimes when Buddhist practice is taught, it's been very helpful for many people to hear lessons of acceptance, of relax, don't do so much, and relax, relax, relax. Many people need that, especially seemingly here in the West. But if that's overdone, that message, then there's no space or no understanding, appreciation, that there are times when having a strong resolve or determination, a stick-to-itness, is very important. And one of the very important ways, and this worked in my own practice, was being in the practice for the long term. Not looking for a quick fix, but rather just day in, day out practicing, and just kind of letting something happen, slowly mellow, open up, resolve, get stronger. A whole series of different these strengths, areas of freedom could happen in the slow day in and day out practicing of meditation, for example, or practicing Buddhist practices and values. And this day in, just slow, kind of steady, holding the course kind of approach, it can be difficult if the people think that what's supposed to happen in Buddhist practice is have peak experiences. You're supposed to have great, wonderful experience, supposed to float on a cloud, you're supposed to have deep experiences of concentration, and there's a lot of peak experiences, and some people are kind of addicted to experiences. I don't want to say that experiences are unimportant, but in the long term, the idea of the steady resolve, holding the course, is very powerful. So take, for example, sitting upright in meditation, taking a simple, upright, relatively straight posture, and then holding the course. So say for the length of your meditation every day, you're not going to change your posture. You're going to hold it upright. And if you hold the course over the weeks and months and years that way, you probably have to contend with a lot of different things that come along. The days when you feel just kind of blue or discouraged or lazy or tired, you have this desire, the body has a desire to collapse. But the resolve, the determination is, no, I'm going to sit upright. And so you sit there. And so you have to develop maybe some inner strength or determination to hold that place. Or the days that you feel overwhelmed by emotions and you feel like you almost want to collapse in your grief, maybe it's okay to do that. But in meditation, the determination has been, my dedication is to sit upright in the midst of whatever goes on in my life. And if I'm full of grief, this is a place not to collapse. This is a place to sit upright in the midst of it and experience that. And in that process, rather than learning strength, maybe, or become stronger, what you learn is you learn to stay open and not to be pushed around, not to collapse, not to give in to a strong emotion that might be there. Or it might be that there's a tremendous amount of restlessness. And so there's all these messages that you should look at your clock and see, you know, it's a time to stop meditating soon, or is it time to check for an email? You know, these emails are very important, right? And so you kind of hear the ping maybe from, you know, so you better, you know, so you can always meditate later. You can't do that for an email, so let's check the email and maybe we'll get back to meditation. You know, all kinds of little inner voices that go on, right? And so, or restless and you feel like you just want to get up and scream or run away or do something. And sometimes it's quite powerful. I've known people who actually gotten up running away screaming. It can happen. On retreat, I've seen that. And, So do we give in to these impulses? Do we give in to the impulse to move or to change or check our clock? I mean, it's okay to do some of them. Don't frighten people by screaming around you. But if the dedication is to sit upright and sit still and not give in to the impulse to look at the watch, not to give in to the impulse to go check an email, not an impulse to give in to the idea to move within reason, then we learn patience. We learn to let go of desire, of impulses. We learn to have some control over the desires that arise in us, that in daily life we don't even notice how often we give in to them. And, you know, how much we're kind of a slave to them, perhaps. One of the exercises that, when I was in Thailand, that teachers there sometimes gave was to assign someone to go sit in the most comfortable chair they could find in the monastery and then not move. And it was comfortable for a while, but after a while, the natural thing is to move and shift and get to the, you know, the pressure on your butt which just shifting a little bit, or, you know. And be told in this nice, easy chair not to move, start seeing how often we move. And it's innocent to move and make ourselves, you know, slightly more comfortable. But we don't see how often that the desire is there and how easily we give into it. Again, that's maybe a minor point, but how is it with what we say, our speech? How often have we said things that later we regret it because we just... We're not in charge of our speech. Something, you know, we're just kind of going along for the ride, and then later we discover what we said. By learning in meditation not to give in to these impulses, we learn to notice the desire and learn the art, the ability not to give in to them. Or maybe we need to. Maybe we don't have strong determination in our life, strong desire. We don't know how to get behind the desire, and really give emphasis and strengthen it. And so, rather than learning to let go of desire, this sitting upright in meditation and not moving does require desire. Does require determination. I'm going to get behind this and actually do it and follow through for these however long I'm going to sit. I'm going to follow through no matter what. So, what I'm trying to convey to you is a simple act of sitting upright can have so many different functions depending on what's happening for us that particular day or month in our lives. And opposites can come into balance. We can come to a balanced place with it. If we're weak, we build up strength. If we're too tense, sitting upright like this for a while, we learn to relax. And so kind of we find the balance. So the determination to stay the course in this example is very powerful. And there's two ways this lesson can go. One is we also start noticing that we want to also metaphorically sit upright in our mind to hold the course there. So for example, be determined, I'm going to stay with my breathing and not let the whims of a mind carry me left and right and to here and there, wherever the mind wants to go. And as I'm sure all of you know, meditate, how difficult it is to sometimes hold the course in the mind, stay focused or concentrated, and not give in to the whims of the mind, and suddenly be lost in other worlds, other times, other places, your thoughts and fantasies. But it can take determination to hold the course. I'm going to stay there, and if I come back, I'm coming back. Determination to stay. And in doing that, all the kind of things I was talking about earlier about doing that with just sitting physically upright also happen. Depending on the weaknesses and the tendencies of the mind, they also come into balance. We find a healthy way of being that way. And in that process, building the strength of determination, bringing this balance, it supports a lot the Buddhist path of coming to freedom. We also learn it in our daily life. We learn how to have determination in daily life, resolve, stick-to-ness, not to give up too easily, not to get distracted too easily, to do things with, develop the right strengths that are needed, support us to kind of hold the course and do what we want to do. And so, this is a very important quality in Buddhist practice. For me, I learned a lot of it in doing Zen practice. My early years of practice was in Zen. And it was kind of a paradox, in a way, because the rhetoric, the teachings that I heard back then about what you do in Zen practice, was to sit, basically sit in a, and just accept whatever was there. Stay in the present moment and have a radical acceptance of the present moment. That sounded great. Whatever is there, just accept it. That was kind of the mind instruction. And then they would say, kind of like, oh, and by the way, when you do that, sit upright and don't move for 40 minutes. Okay. And so there was then the determination of strength that happened, all this kind of inner development and change happened from sitting upright that allowed, I think, a more very meaningful for me, very meaningful and profound movement of freedom from doing this radical acceptance of the present moment. So if I just practice radical acceptance to every whim and idea that I have, it's not really freedom. But to be able to sit still and not be pushed around and not follow every whim and everything that comes along, but to be stronger than that or have a freedom that's bigger than that or acceptance that's big and wide and that can hold it all, whatever arises can be held in this. In Zen they talked about the sky-like mind, a mind that's like a sky that can hold whatever comes up. But it needs support to do that. And so in Zen practice, a lot of that came from what you do with your body, so sitting upright. But also came in Zen from the regularity of practice. And it was great, you know, the rhetoric back in the early 70s when I got interested in Zen, it was still kind of the Alan Watts kind of beatnik Zen was still in the air. And it was kind of like freedom, you know, just like spontaneity and just, you know, whatever. And was there in the background of the popular idea of Zen. And so all these hippies like me, you know, would show up to be free at Zen Center and then sit still, show up for meditation at 5 o'clock in the morning, sit still. At 5:40, there's a bell, get up and walk. Only for 9 minutes, there's a bell, sit down. There's a bell, get up. You have to walk upstairs to the chanting hall and you have to stand there in straight lines and you chant in unison with everybody else until there's a bell. And then you go do clean the temple for 15 minutes until there's a bell. And then you go to breakfast and you don't talk at breakfast until there's a bell. And, you know, the freedom that I was expecting as a hippie, you know, where was it? But what it brought with it is determination. Hold the course. And I found in that process there that I had to let go a lot. I had to get stronger in ways. There's all kinds of things that developed and happened within me. And then at some point, I felt that I could carry with me a sense of inner discipline, determination, and freedom. I didn't need any more of those forms and that discipline of, you know, the formal discipline of Zen, but I could carry it with me and be freer as a result. The teaching of determination, this resolve, can lend itself to over-determination, to get kind of tight, determined in a stern way or tight way. And I've known a fair number of meditators who've been overly grim and ambitious in their meditation. I'm going to do this, I'm going to be determined, I'm going to push ahead and, you know, barrel through and bust through, you know, enlightenment or bust. And generally with that attitude, a bust is what comes. And so it's important to balance determination include indetermination, determination to be relaxed. And this is one of the great paradoxes of determination, is that if being relaxed is part of the determination, you can't really go wrong. Be determined to not get tense. And then you watch yourself get tense, nope, I'm not going to do that, not going to do that. And then you get tense because you're trying to do it, so then you make a course correction and relax. And this is a little bit I think, inherent in classic Buddhist teachings. There's the Buddha taught about four important resolves or determinations that support a person's life. And these four resolves continue to be teachings that are taught in Thailand, in Theravadan countries, that are useful for almost any endeavor that you're going to engage in. So they apply in all kinds of places, and maybe you want to consider how they apply in different areas of life. But here are the four. Determination for truth. To be determined to be connected to truth, to be true yourself, to discover the truth. To be determined to be a lover of truth, to have a focus on truth. And that's valuable on many different levels. It's valuable on the ethical level, not to lie, to be focused on being truth and truthful and honest. To be honest and truthful to others. But in Buddhism, the most important person to be honest to is yourself. And it's remarkable, you know, how much maneuvering it can be around truth to ourselves sometimes. The Dharma is said to be the truth. And so this idea of sitting upright and being open to your experience means to be open to the truth of the moment and to connect to the truth of the moment in a certain kind of devotion to the truth of the moment. Here, I'm going to be here with it. And what I found is that the truth will unfold. The truth will change you if you sit upright and are open and present for the truth of the moment. You don't have to be so much in charge of your practice as you are if you stay present and open to this moment, attentive to this moment as it is. The truth will practice you. Rather than you doing the practice, you get to be practiced on. It's great. The second determination is the determination for wisdom, to be wise. And but before I tell you that one, I want to tell you read you a story around the first one. I forgot in a moment. Only a couple of seconds behind. This is a story from my book, A Monastery Within. Two young men happened to enter the monastery on the same day. One was an aristocrat who had a sense of entitlement. The other was the son of local farmers who had spent his life working on the family farm. During their entrance interview, the abbess asked them why they were becoming monks. The aristocrat said that he had come to climb to the highest achievement of human life, to experience the bliss, the glory, and the brilliant light of liberation. The peasant said, "I am poor and unschooled, and I have no hope for enlightenment. However, I hope to find the path in everyday I hope to find the path of practice in the everyday activities of my life. May I see the truth in the food I eat, in the work I do, in the people I encounter." Within 6 months, the peasant was graced with liberation. The aristocrat is still striving on courageously. So dedication to the truth, to find the truth in the ordinary aspects of our life, as opposed to this, you know, Big Bang theories of spirituality. So then, the second one is determination on wisdom. And wisdom in the early Buddhist tradition is not very complicated. And I'll offer you one kind of, maybe hopefully a sense of how simple it can be and how profound it can be. It involves being able to make a distinction. And the distinction is to be, and the distinction, and making distinctions is an important part of this wisdom aspect. But so this is a very important distinction. The distinction between being at ease and being tense. So hopefully you know something about that distinction in order to, you know, imagine what I'm, you know, to relate to what I'm saying. If you can make that distinction between having some modicum of ease in your life versus having some tension or strain in your life, notice when you have ease, some modicum of ease, And notice when you lose it. And notice how and why you lost it. What happened that you lost it. If you do that, you'll become a wise person. Determination on wisdom to see how this operates. Now, it might seem kind of, you know, simplistic and minor. It seems like it's certainly you'd probably become a much wiser person if you got a PhD in philosophy. But Buddhism is not meant to be a complicated philosophical thing. It's meant to be practical and beneficial in this moment. And if you follow the path of being at ease and noticing what takes you away, and you keep doing that with determination, you'll begin kind of rooting down into the very roots of your psyche, of the places that keep you caught. And you'll find greater and greater ease. And the greater the ease you have, the greater the peace you have. The greater the peace you have, the greater the happiness you'll have. It's a fantastic route to take. It doesn't save you now from having to go to school for a philosophy degree. Follow the ease. So that's wisdom. Determination, that's one example, determination on wisdom. There's other ways of talking about it or seeing it. The third determination is a determination on, it's a very interesting term, chaga in Pali, which means, has a kind of dual meaning. Sometimes it's translated as generosity, which is nice. It's nice, right? Be determined on generosity. And the Buddhist tradition puts a tremendous emphasis on the personal benefits that the practitioners get from becoming generous, being generous. Independent of any benefit you give anybody else, the Buddhist spiritual life, the inner development of life develops a lot through the act of being generous, being partly because generosity, genuine generosity, involves letting go of our clinging, to let something go. And so we explore this area of holding on and opening up, letting go. So one meaning of this word is generosity, and the other word of the meaning of this word is chaga, is relinquishment, to let go. So you can kind of see they're kind of two sides of the same coin, right? If you give something, you let go. But if we only translate it as letting go or relinquishment, it's too easy for people to think that if I have to let go, I'm diminished. I'm losing something. These Buddhists, they're always talking about letting go and you're supposed to become a monk or a nun and just have nothing and give away my money and my food and my everything, my house. And these Buddhists are unrealistic. But if the emphasis is not, but if the letting go is seen in the light of how we benefit from it, we see it as an act of generosity, then I think it's a whole different equation, a whole different way of looking at it. So there's something about the process of letting go, something about the process of generosity that's so important that it's considered one of the four healthy or appropriate determinations for a Buddhist practitioner. So that's the third one. And the fourth determination, and this is also the protection for all the determinations, is the determination for peace, to be relaxed, to be at ease. So to have that as a goal, like have that as a kind of like your beacon that you're working towards, to have that as the orientation around which we can orient our life, the value of what's important. Now, you might think that you have things going on in your life that are more important than becoming peaceful, of peace. But I suspect a lot of the goals that many people in our life have in their life are either not as beneficial as becoming peaceful, or they're indirect and maybe misguided ways of trying to cultivate the sense of wholeness, sense of completeness that the deep abiding peace is all about. And so at least in the Buddhist spiritual world, peace is often presented as kind of the one description of the goal of practice. And if we can discover a deep abiding sense of peace, what it means is our heart has learned to be at home in itself. If your heart is not at home in itself, if you sit down and are quiet in the own solitude of your life or in your meditation, and you feel that your heart, your mind is agitated, wanting, afraid, agitated, and not really settled on itself, then there's no peace. But for your heart to be at home in itself, is a description of this peace. And then from that can come, you know, living a life of, you know, a wonderful life. Life, if you like, a life of generosity, a life of compassion. Other things can be done from that. So life determined on peace means that you're not going to give up your peace. You're not going to sacrifice your peace because you think something else is better. And that's part of the wisdom piece, is to look at this distinction between why do you want to give up your peace? For what, or your ease, if you like, what is worth giving up your ease for? What's worth giving up your peace for? And then the protection from becoming a peaceful couch potato. Finally, I discovered a religion that, you know, gives me permission to just be a couch potato. And is the sense of determination, so sitting upright. I think that if you dedicate yourself to sitting upright in meditation every day for 45 minutes, and then in the context of sitting upright and strong, dignified, discover how to be at peace, I would venture to guess that you will not become a couch potato. I would venture to guess that a certain kind of vitality and inspiration for living your life and freedom from living your life will in time flow out of that. It's a powerful thing to do. So holding the course, being determined, having a resolve, but having a resolve that unties all the knots of your life. Isn't that great? So we have a couple of minutes before the end. So I'd like to hear if you have any comments about this talk, what I've said, or any questions about it, or any protests. Yes, please. And if you could use the mic, then other people can hear. And also, it'd be nice if you said your name first.
I'm Susan. Good evening. And that question I have, I just noticed that my ego seems to have a heck of a time of letting go. And I'm just wondering, it just feels like acquisition kind of fuels it or fortifies it. And I'm just wondering how that works.
I think a lot of things fortify the ego. So I don't know how it works, and I don't know how important it is to understand how it works. Like an answer like that, from a point of view of the practice we do here, I have a question for you. What does it feel like for you when your ego is operating?
Well, right when you ask that, I realize I have to go into my head, and then I make something up about.
Oh.
Stop writing.
There's a great story. Make something up. There's a great story. This is a great story. A Chinese story, but Bodhidharma was the person who brought Zen to China, they say. And at some point he came to China and he went and meditated in a cave by himself for 9 years. But then he became famous for this great meditator. And so this person who became his successor was unhappy and miserable. And he was looking for some practice, some solutions. He heard about this guy in the cave. And so he hiked through the snow. It was wintertime to find the cave and stood outside the cave waiting for Bodhidharma to come out. And Bodhidharma finally came out and said, "What are you doing?" "I'm here, teach me how pacify my mind. To bring peace to my mind," or something. And Bodhidharma said, "Bring me your mind." And the guy, "I can't find it." And Bodhidharma said, "Your mind is pacified." So, don't... So don't imagine so much. And see what's there when you're not imagining. And if you find something, if you don't imagine, but if you find something that connected to this working of the ego that you talked about, get really interested in what that feels like, rather than the whys of it. Whatever is activated in the mind and body when this thing you call the ego is operating, what happens if you're open to that, if you're present for it, if you feel it, if you make space for it, if you allow it to exist in that kind of sky-like mind, what happens? As opposed to solving it. And if you do that, it might dissolve rather than be solved. Does that make some sense?
Hi, I'm Lindsay. So I have a question.
Yes.
I don't know if it's from my Western culture upbringing or just part of who I am or part of the strive to be professional or prestigious, but I feel like sometimes I'm too determined and to the point where I will drive myself crazy or bury myself into the ground because I feel like I'm so determined to get everything done. It's almost too much.
Absolutely.
And so I was wondering if you had any comments for where's the balance, I guess.
So I'll tell you another story of a friend of mine who came to her Zen teacher with a statement like that. And she was, I guess, looking for some help or some advice or something. And so she told a story of how busy she was and determined she was, how much she was doing and all that. And the teacher looked at her and said, "That's because you're lazy." And she thought that was a bizarre answer. Because, you know, she was certainly not lazy. She was doing all this stuff. And then she thought, because her teacher said this to her, she thought about it. And after a while, she said, "Yes." Turns out she was lazy. She was doing all that to avoid the work of looking at herself. That's where the real work was. So I'm not saying that you're doing that. But you might consider it. And then the other thing is that, a couple of things I said in this talk. One was the wisdom piece and the thing about determination for peace and the wisdom of focusing on the ease. So you might want to kind of have a heightened sense, heightened determination on being relaxed. And so as you go about your determined life doing all these other things, be determined to do it in a relaxed way. And if you can't do it in a relaxed way, that's interesting. Then turn around and look at what is it that's propelling you? What's the beliefs? What are the emotions? What are the feelings that propel you to override being relaxed? What are the messages you have? I gotta get. Okay?
Thank you.
Well, so I hope that all of you, if you take one thing from this talk, it's probably the safest thing to take is be determined to be relaxed. And so I wish you all well, and may the quality of determination be something that nourishes you as you go about. So thank you.